Let's get our Bibles and go to Matthew chapter 5. We're teaching a series of sermons on Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, and this series is called the Commandments of Jesus, the Ten Commandments of Jesus. Just like Moses brought down Ten Commandments from the mountain, Jesus took his disciples up into the mountain and gave them Ten Commandments. We're going to be looking at the first of those ten today. And you know, as we go through these, and I'm going to have hopefully one sermon on each of the commandments, as we look through these commandments, you might think to yourself as we're talking about it, well, that's not really a problem for me. You know, that particular commandment, it's not an issue for me. You know, that's and you're thinking about somebody else sitting in the room or somebody else that you know, and you say, oh, that commandment's for that person. Well, all these commandments are for all of us. And don't worry, if this one doesn't prick your heart, one of them will. Your commandment is coming, all right? Because I'm going to tell you right now, every one of us struggles with at least one or more of these commandments. I guarantee you, all right? And if this one isn't your problem, yours is coming. So we'll be talking about you a little later. All right, Matthew chapter 5. Let's begin reading in verse 21. We're going to read through verse 26. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. And whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are in the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge, and the judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Assuredly, I say to you, you will by no means get out until you have paid the last penny. Do you remember what Jesus said just before this? He said that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom. The Pharisees had a certain way of measuring righteousness, and that measurement was incorrect. And Jesus is pointing that out here in these verses. Look what he says again in verse 21. He says, you have heard that it was said of those of old, you shall not murder. That's a quote from the Ten Commandments, isn't it? You shall not murder. And then he talks about, after that, he mentions the contemporary explanation of that, or how the scribes and the Pharisees understood that. They understood it that whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. In danger of the judgment. Now, I need to explain to you that in the Jewish way of thinking, there were three levels of judgment. All right, the judgment, what's called the judgment here, was the local judgment. All right, you had a complaint or a problem, or if you were accused of a crime, you were brought before the local religious leaders of the day in your particular community, and they would pass judgment on you. There was a higher level of that, which was the Sanhedrin, the Jewish Sanhedrin, which was sort of like their Supreme Court. It's called the Council. That's the Jewish Sanhedrin, all right? Appeals went to there. Or if you were accused of a much more serious crime, you would be tried before the council. The highest level is God's judgment seat. God's judgment seat. And what we see in this passage is all three levels here dealt with in the way that a Jewish person would understand them. So he says here, you have heard it was said of those, if you murder, whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. And that was the lowest level. That was the local judge. You're going to be in danger of the local courts. Okay. Then he says in verse 22, but I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. That is, what he's saying is what the Pharisees consider as worthy of going before the local judge was murder. Jesus said, I equate that simply with anger. If you're angry, I hold that on the same level. If you're angry without a just cause, I hold that on the same level as the scribes and Pharisees consider murder to be held. That's pretty profound, isn't it? But then he goes on. He says, and whoever says to his brother, Raca, Raca, that's an Aramaic word, and it means you stupid or you're ignorant. It literally means empty-headed. You call somebody ignorant or stupid. All right? And then he says, whoever says you fool will be in danger of hellfire. Now, Raca was the council. That was the supreme court, if you will, of the land. So he's saying that that's a much more severe crime as far as Christ is concerned. Now, what is the difference between simply being angry with someone without a cause and calling them a name like stupid? What is the difference? Well, one is expressed in words, right, as an insult. The other is simply something that you're harboring in your heart. It might be expressed in body language or something like that, but you haven't actually insulted the person. You're just angry. But then he takes it a step further, and he says you insult the person. You call them stupid. And then he says those who says you fool will be in danger of hellfire. Now, what is the difference here? Why this escalation of things? You can see a threefold escalation, can't you? First, you're simply angry with someone without a just cause. Secondly, you call them a name that is an insult. Thirdly, you call them a fool, which goes beyond talking about their mental abilities. Now you're talking about their character. Their character. All right? What I want you to notice here, something you need to notice. The very first commandment that Jesus gave in his list of 10 commandments deals not with your relationship to God. It deals with your relationship to your fellow brother. What was the first commandment in the 10 commandments? Does anybody know? What's the first commandment?
Thou shalt have no other gods but me.
Right. You should have no other gods before me. It deals with your relationship to God. But I think it's significant that in Jesus' very first commandment here, he talks about something entirely different. He talks about your relationship with your brother. And notice it is with your brother, not with a stranger, that he's talking here about. Notice that in verse 22. Whoever is angry with his brother. He's talking about a fellow believer. Now, in this context, he was talking about his followers, his disciples. All right? Angry with his brother. Relationships amongst Christians, amongst brothers. And, of course, that would certainly also apply to your physical brother, wouldn't it? Those who are of your own household. You know, we talked in Sunday school briefly about the fact that the local church is a place where we come together out from amongst the world, and we are brothers and sisters in Christ. We have a bond, right? We're brothers. And we come here in order to practice the things that Christ has commanded us to do amongst our brothers in this personal relationship. You know, all of us, I think, have transgressed this commandment. I know I have. All of us have. But I want you to look what he says next. Verse 23. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you. And when he's talking about what he just mentioned, which was you've insulted him, right? You've called him names, whatever it happens to be. Leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Now, why is this such a big deal? I want you to think about this. Why is this such a big deal if you insulted somebody who's your brother? Why is it such a big deal? What is he saying here? He's saying you're coming to worship God and you're bringing your gift to the altar. When you come to church and you bring your offering, Jesus is saying, turn around and go back out the door. Okay? Go back out the door and you go make it right with your brother first and then you come and worship me. You know what he's saying? He's saying if you are not right with your brother, you're not right with me. And don't come into my house and pretend to be worshiping me when you can't possibly worship me because you have something between you and your brother. That's what he's saying. I want you to take your Bibles and go over to James chapter 3 for just a moment. I want you to show you the severity of what Jesus is talking about here. James chapter 3. By the way, Carl, I didn't print out the verses, but I put all the... Oh, I'm sorry. Linda, can you go to the next slide? I put all the references up there, so if you want to find them ahead of time, you can. James chapter 3. Look at verse 1. Why is it so serious when you insult other believers? My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. And by the way, this is an apostle. This is James, the brother of Jesus, writing here, okay? We all stumble in many ways. If he admitted that he, in fact, stumbled, then don't think you're perfect, all right? If James, the brother of Jesus, writing this epistle, stumbles, so do you. All right. If anyone does not stumble in word, that is, in his speech, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. I don't think it's a coincidence that Jesus' first commandment deals with speech. And James says that the person who can control his speech is a perfect man, a complete man. It's very, 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 very important that we control our speech. He says, verse 3, indeed, we put bits in the horse's mouth that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. A big ship has a little rudder. That little rudder has a lot of power. And what he's saying is your tongue is like that little rudder. That little rudder, that little thing in your mouth has a lot more power than you realize. He goes on, even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. A little match. And in this case, it's a harsh word. It's an unkind word. It's like a little match. All right? It starts a little fire. And what happens? You see what's going on out west with the fires? Burning acres and homes are burned down and just absolute devastation. That's what a wrong word can do. Verse 6, a tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by man. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. In other words, what he's saying is it's not normal for the same mouth to have blessings and cursings and insults coming out of it. It's not normal. He goes on, who is a wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. And I want to tell you something right there. He's putting his finger on what is necessary for you to correct your mouth. Meekness. Humility. And then he goes on, but if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. You know what he's saying? He's saying the thing that drives this kind of talk is a heart problem. It's a heart problem. It's bitterness. It's envy. It's jealousy. It's pride. It can be all these different things that are the works of the flesh. They come out through your mouth. Remember what Jesus said about the mouth? It's in Mark. Did I write it down? Mark 7, 14. Look at Mark 7. Go over to Mark 7 for just a moment. Mark 7, 14. When he had called all the multitude to himself, he said to them, "Hear me, everyone, and understand. There is nothing that enters a man from the outside which can defile him." And by the way, in the context here, he was talking about the fact that the Jews were so critical about what you could eat, what you couldn't eat, and whether you washed your hands through all this ritual, and if there might have been a little dirt on your hands or something, and it goes into your mouth. And Jesus is saying, you know what? That stuff doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. There's nothing that enters a man through his mouth, is essentially what he means, from outside which can defile him. But the things which come out of him, those things, those are the things that defile a man. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. When he entered a house away from the crowd, the disciples asked him concerning the parable. So he said to them, "Are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him, because it does not enter his heart, but his stomach, and is eliminated, thus purifying all foods?" And he said, "What comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of man, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornication, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these come from within a man and defile him." You know, I'm going to make a very profound statement for you, and you ought to write this down. Okay, this is very serious and very profound, because I thought of it. Your mouth is the dipstick of your heart. Okay? You know what a dipstick is? Does anybody know what a dipstick is? It's in your car. It's where you check your motor oil, right? And I'm the only guy that here that probably would have thought of this illustration. When you pull your dipstick out, you can see the oil on there. You can see how much oil is in that engine. You can see the condition of the oil, which tells you a lot about the condition of the engine. All right? That's what your mouth is. People know who you are by your words. They know what kind of character you have by your words. So if you want to display a good character, your words need to be right. But you know, it's not enough to just clean up the outside unless we clean up the inside. We need to get at the heart of the problem, don't we? But here's something else. You know, somebody will say, well, you know, Jesus there said that we're to get these things right. When we come and we offer our gift before God, we are to leave our gift and go make it right and then come and worship God. But what if your brother is not willing? He's not willing to reconcile when you have these problems with him. I'm going to read you one quick passage. You don't need to turn there, but in Romans chapter 12, verse 18, the Apostle Paul was actually commenting on this sermon. And he said this. He said, "If it is possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all," or all men. As much as it depends on you. In other words, do your part to make things right. If another person won't do their part and they simply will not forgive or they will not do right, you have no control over that, all right? But if you're going to come and you're going to worship God, and you're coming into his house to worship him, you cannot, listen to me, you cannot worship God until you make it right with your fellow man. You cannot. You know what worship means? We've talked about this before. Do you know what the word worship means? It means to bow down to the ground, prostrate before someone. And it's a symbol of being in utter and complete submission to that person. Worship, by the way, in case you didn't know this, is not a style of music. Okay? I don't know if you're aware of that or not. Worship is not a style of music. Worship is the complete submission of your life to Jesus Christ. That is worship. If you're going to come and worship God and you're bringing your gift, if you haven't really done that, if you haven't really bowed down to him like that, with regard to this particular command, then he doesn't want your offering. Now, I'm not saying that because we're getting too much money in the offering, because that's not the case. All right? But God doesn't want your offering until you first obey his commandments. This commandment. Verse 25. He says, "Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Assuredly, I say to you, you will by no means get out of there till you have paid the last penny. What is he saying? He's saying, take care of business quick. Don't put it off. Don't put it off. You know why? If you put it off, you might suffer some consequences. All right? You might suffer some consequences. Take care of it right away. Don't delay. Now the challenge, and we'll close. I want all of you to think in your mind who it is that you have insulted, who it is that you have gotten angry with, who it is that you have said things about. Are you thinking? Anybody? Don't raise your hand. Okay? Your assignment this week is to go to that person, apologize, get it right, and don't do it again, so that when you come here next Sunday, you can offer your gift and worship God in the way that He deserves to be worshiped. And for the rest of you who don't have anyone that you've offended, don't worry. We're coming to your commandment in a week or two. All right? So you'll have your assignment to do as well. Let's pray.